You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. My name is Matt Lusty, and I'm filling in for the wonderful Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. Filling in for Senator Jim DeBacus on the left is Ermia Funayon. Ermia, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming on to be with us today. And on the right, we have Eric Rowan from the Utah Young Republicans. Howdy, howdy.
Well, howdy. I'm happy to be back.
Thanks for coming on. So we're going to start with national news. I want to talk about something that is at the top of the news. Justice Anthony Kennedy announced his retirement, sending shockwaves throughout the country. You probably have a lot of conservatives rejoicing. You probably have a lot of people on the left living in terror and fear at this moment as President Donald Trump gets ready to make a decision that is going to alter the balance of the Supreme Court. We're going to go to Ermia first. What's the quick take? How are you feeling?
I mean, I can speak for a lot on the left that this is concerning because there's obviously been an imbalance on the Supreme Court. And with so many decisions that they've just made when it comes to the Muslim ban, when it comes to the unions, those decisions were propelled based on political divide that's on the Supreme Court.
You think they're legislating from the bench there, which is kind of a scary thought because right now we felt like there's kind of a balance. And Justice Anthony Kennedy was always the deciding vote. Eric, let's go over to you on the right. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, well, at first I want to say that to say a lot of these decisions were made because of political reasonings, I think is absolutely false. I think especially the Muslim ban, if you look at their reasoning behind the decision, it's based on interpretation of the Constitution and applying the law as it was written. Now, aside from that, when we get into looking at the makeup of the court, I mean, this is a huge win for the Republican Party. This is what they campaigned on. A lot of people justified their vote for Trump and ignored the really distasteful and terrible things he did based on the idea that they're going to get two Supreme Court picks. And this feeds into that. I think Democrats have a lot to worry about in elections coming up as they talk more about this.
You know, so two thoughts that I want to touch on. The first is, I think you're absolutely right. Exit polling showed that a lot of Republicans voted the way they did because they thought of the Supreme Court and they knew that they had an older Supreme Court. But the second thought is going back to whether we're legislating from the bench or not. It's hard for me sitting in the political middle to look at this decision and say, well, yes, no, it's not a Muslim ban because the only countries that aren't Muslim that are on the list are North Korea and Venezuela. I mean, any thoughts on that? I mean, it leans into ideology.
And here's what I'm saying. If the president himself, when he first introduced this ban, he called it a Muslim ban. Mm. It is axiomatically a Muslim ban, and this ban was propelled based on religious bias. Now, you can debate me on that all day long, and I have been debated on it. People have been telling me that, you know, it's not a Muslim ban because it's only seven countries and there are so many other countries that are Muslim. But when the president himself is introducing this ban as the Muslim ban, it is axiomatically racially biased.
Yeah, words matter, right? That's where it comes. Eric, do you have a response to that?
I'm not going to debate you on whether it was racially divisive, but what it was within the powers of the president. And that's what the Supreme Court said.
That's the interesting point here. Whether or not we feel that it is, it's been upheld. So that brings a lot of controversy as we go into this next pick. Speaking of who the next pick could be, Senator Mike Lee, our own senator here in the state of Utah, is on the short list, as well as his brother, Justice Thomas Lee, who sits on the Utah Supreme Court. What are our thoughts on that? Could we have a special election coming up? Is Governor Herbert going to be able to pick someone new to go into to represent that Senate seat before the next election? Eric, let's start with you on your thoughts there, and then we'll switch over to Ermia.
Yeah, this has huge implications for Utah, and especially as we come out of a primary into a general where we have a Mitt Romney running for Senate, we could have another race coming up. I think, you know, we'll have to see what happens if he gets nominated and what those hearings look like. He's really young, which I think is unusual for a Supreme Court pick, but I wouldn't put it past the Trump administration.
And Neil Gorsuch was 49, and I think if you're a Republican, you're thinking, well, we want someone young in there to fill that bench, which going over to you, Ermia, I mean, that's kind of a scary thought, right?
Yeah, and you know, I do believe that this could bring up another election, but I think it's going to be fascinating the way this plays out and if Mike Lee gets the seat or not.
Yeah, it would be really interesting for Utah. And I think the funny thing about it is Mitt Romney always wins, except when he's running for president, right? but I mean, if that happens, Mitt Romney is not going to spend one day as the junior senator from Utah. It goes straight to being the senior senator, which I just think is funny. We're going to stay on Supreme Court rulings. We talked about this a little bit already, but the travel ban, 5-4, Justice Kennedy casting the deciding vote. As far as this travel ban goes, Senator Hatch and Senator lead, they both said that this decision confirms the executive order as a lawful presidential power, whereas local Utah Muslim leaders have said, you know, this makes Muslims feel targeted. And that's also a scary thought, right? I mean, we're trying to balance here what is the power of the president, but also we have individuals in our society that don't feel like they are being treated fairly or they're being targeted. Ermia, you started kind of on this conversation, but I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit more about that. Maybe take 30 seconds or so and let us know your thoughts on that.
You know, this one of the seven countries is Iran, which is a country that I'm from. And so me and fellow folks who are on that list that are from those countries, we do feel this is very threatening. And we do feel that this is a very divisive decision. And we don't think that this reflects on American values at all.
Interesting. Eric, what are your thoughts on that? Because how do you balance the two, right? How do you balance, well, we live in this country of laws, and the law says that the president of the United States was able to put this ban in place, and then the Supreme Court upheld that. So there's the law side, but also, you know, is this compassionate? Is this the right way to look at it? Is compassion that something that should be considered in this conversation?
Yeah, so I mean, I want to start off by saying historically, the Supreme Court has tentatively and hesitantly takes away power from the president. So I was not surprised to see them uphold the power of the president to make this decision. Now, regarding your question of whether we use compassion, we absolutely do. But as Trump has said before, the compassion goes across both sides. It's compassion for those who are entering the country, and it's compassion for those who are within the country. And the president has a lot to juggle on that. He has to protect the safety and the well-being of the citizens of the country while keeping in mind the right for others to enter the country and that process. So it's a hard decision.
Yeah, I think one of the really difficult decisions – well, it's a hard decision, but one of the really difficult perspectives that I think you have to understand here, both as a listener and just as a citizen of the United States, is who wins here? And is there one side that can win for everyone? I don't think there is. Say something happens to the United States from somebody from one of those seven countries, everybody's going to have their hair on fire and say, well, this is wrong. But then at the same time, you look in the communities already within the United States and you're having people feel, you know, oppressed. And they're saying, whoa, hair on fire, this is wrong. Well, right? And so how do you balance that?
Yeah, statistically, we're not going to have, you know, the data does not show that we're at an increased risk when we accept refugees in. I mean, that's what the data says.
Yeah.
And same thing with immigrants as well, right? And so, it's a hard decision.
So should we be following data in our legislative decisions? Ermia, let's go to you on that thought.
You know, I think hopefully we should be following data. That would be the quintessential thing to do. However, we're not, right? And we're using the scare tactic saying that this is a national security issue, which data shows that it's not.
Is this a political move? Is everything kind of with the eyes toward the 2018 midterms hold power? Or is this something that is really, you think that people are looking out for the best interests of people? Or is everything politics? I mean, everything's politics, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're playing politics with everything nowadays. When we're looking at the immigration issue, when we're looking at this ban, it's politics back and forth. So I do think this is a political move.
Yeah,
well,
Eric.
And I said this about President Barack Obama, and I'll say it about Trump as well. I do think he has the best interest in mind. Now, whether you agree with his tactics and the way he wants to take the country, that's up for discussion. But I do think they both had the best interest in mind.
You know, and that's one thing that I would touch on, and this is once again my moderate middle coming out, wanting to hug everyone and say, let's all get along, everyone. But I would say this is, you know, I agree with you. I think President Obama, when he was in office, had in mind, or what he was doing was his intentions were doing the most amount of good for the most amount of people as possible. And I want to believe the same thing about President Trump. And I do think that. I don't think that he's out there, you know, trying to do something that is going to cause harm. But at the same time, you know, we do live in this world where, you know, we brought it up already. Everything's politically motivated, which, by the way, listeners, hint, hint, that's going to get at my gripe later in the show when we talk about gripes. We're going to take a pause there and get ready for the next segment. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Stay with us. We're going to be talking about a few issues close to home coming up. Thanks very much for listening.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
This is Ramia Fanayan, and I'm on the left.
And this is Eric Rohn on the right.
And my name is Matt Lusty. I'm filling in for Natalie Gochner in the political middle. Before we left during the break, we were talking about some international issues, and I promised we were going to bring it back closer to home, but we can't leave the national issues without talking about families at the border. So last week, the Trump administration implemented an executive order to detain families together in facilities that they will build or buy. There's been a lot of news and information, some very factual, some misleading, shared on social media by all kinds of sides on this issue. And I really want to get in this conversation to some factual heart of the issue discussion. We talked a little bit about, you know, compassion and good legislating. And so we're going to start there. Eric, let's start with you on this issue. Give us a quick synopsis of what's going on. Or Mia, we're going to give you a chance to give a quick synopsis of what's going on. But we're going to find some points where we're on the same page. And then we're going to find some points where there's some disagreement going on.
Sure. Well, I mean, Attorney General Jeff Sessions made it very clear that the law was going to be implemented. And they chose as a policy, as an administration, to separate kids from their families in order to do the different detainment and then put through criminal procedures. And when we go back to compassion, it's really clear. We need to have compassion for kids. And this was the wrong choice to make. This was a bad policy move. Mm-hmm. And that was recently corrected when, as you mentioned, President Trump made the executive order to stop separating the kids from their families and essentially implemented an identical policy to what the Obama administration did back in the 2015 and 2016, when there was a lot of gripe about that as well. My big beef is that the Democrats fought so hard, and Chuck Schumer said President Trump can fix this with a pen. And then President Trump did, and there was no applause. There was no good job. There was no anything. And I don't think, President Trump needs that. But what it says is that the Democrats, that's not what they really wanted. What they really wanted was for these immigrants to be let free. They didn't, I won't go as far as say they didn't care about the kids, because I think they did. We all do. But they didn't care about the separation, and that's my big beef with this.
Yeah, Ermia, let's go to the left.
Well, what I want to say is that we absolutely did care about the separation. And the reason we did not applaud President Trump when he enacted this executive order was because this executive order did not have a plan to enact any kind of reuniting of the children that were already separated. The 2,000 children that were separated from their parents, there was no plan implemented to reunite those children with their parents. Now, just yesterday, the ACLU had a victory, and they were able to get a federal court to decide that within 30 days, those children must be reunited with their parents. And if they're under 5 years old, it has to be within 14 days. I'm excited to see how that plays out. However, that is the reason we did not applaud the president, because applause is not – there's no reason to give it applause. The executive order was basically frivolous in the way the left has seen it. And another thing that I want to state is, Senator Kamala Harris has been very open about this. She stated that Secretary Nielsen should resign because the way she is running the agency, it does not reflect on American values. And I have to stand with Senator Kamala Harris and say I agree with her.
Yeah, so a couple of interesting points that came from that discussion from both of you. One is, there's absolutely American values in keeping family united. I mean, that sounded together. The thing that's interesting to me, I guess, about the executive order is that, once again, getting back to things that are politically driven, it just seemed that when it became apparent that this was not popular, something changed, right? Mm-hmm. In a way, that's the American process, right? You show that it's not popular, and so something changed. But on the other side, again, we have to balance what is the law, right? And getting to your point, Ermia, this is, that's what the secretary says. He said, well, hey, this is the law. My job is to enforce the law. And then you had people saying, well, yeah, but the law is telling you to physically separate families. That's not right. So, I mean, that's an interesting
And we
balance.
Go back to looking at so many different laws that has separated families. We look at laws back in the 1960s. We look at laws, what was happening with Japanese Americans. These were all laws. Let's be very clear about that. It was the law to illegally be black in a space. It was the law to build concentration camps for Japanese Americans. That was a part of the law. So laws do not reflect our American values. So we have to understand what we are prioritizing here. Are we prioritizing a law that can be changed, like you said, by a pen? Or are we prioritizing American values?
Yeah, though, and you know what? You're right. Bringing up the history of internment camps and different things like that, it makes us question, well, how was this still a law and how can we change that? I mean, I think for me, that's the question going forward is we just had kind of an ugly period happen. And I think that it is wrong for us as Americans not to take a look in the mirror and say, what are our values? How do we implement those values? And how do we make sure situations like this don't happen in the future? I can't imagine a context where you take a child from their mother, whether you're upset about how the mother came to that point, whether she did it legally or lawfully, that you separate them like that. I get the argument that, well, we don't keep criminals with their families. Yeah, I get that. I don't think we should keep violent criminals with their family. But at the end of the day, what's better, separating a violent criminal from that kid? Is that better for the kid? Or separating the kid from, you know, as someone who hasn't committed a violent crime? I don't think we were asking the right questions.
And not to mention the unequivocal trauma that these children are experiencing as they are being separated from their parents. That is something that is not being taken into account. And what also isn't being taken into account is so many of these people are coming as refugees. When they're trying to get through the border, they're coming as refugees. It's something that we also have to take into account.
Yeah, I'm going to go on like a little 1 minute rant and then I'm going to give it to Eric. So everyone just be warned. But the thing that is really bugging me about immigration policy right now is there are so many common sense fixes, right? Like the number of H-1B visas, right, that are available. H-1B visas are the visas given to highly skilled workers. Here's the deal. We've got companies like Microsoft building plants in Costa Rica so that they can hire workers that are talented, that have master's degree level education from all over the world. But because we don't have an expanded number of H-1B visas that we can give to those workers, we can't bring them into the United States to pay taxes. We can't bring educated people that statistically are not going to commit crimes, that are statistically not going to. And you know what? Here's the thing. If you survey members of Congress, and I'm talking about Democrats, Republicans, and everyone in between, they all agree, yeah, we should expand the cap on H-1B visas. That's a great idea. Oh, yeah, and there are a lot of common sense fixes like that. But guess what? Anytime those things come up, they're tied to a damn wall or they're tied to something else that the Republicans don't agree with or the Democrats don't agree with. And I'm just looking at Congress and I'm saying, you want to know why 90% of people don't approve, 90% of people in the United States don't approve of you? It's because you can't do something simple like that that we all agree on. Anyway, that was my 1 minute rant. I'm going to go to Eric now, and then we're going to move on to a different topic after.
You know, I completely agree. And it's what I've said before is that, you know, the Trump administration was implementing the law as they saw it and as it was written. And this was something that the left really asked for back when Obama was in office. You know, they wanted something to change with the detainment camps. And so the law changed. And here we are today. And now they're complaining about it again. And I'm complaining about it again. But to turn to the president and say, well, why don't you just fix this with the stroke of a pen? It's shifting the blame from both Republicans and Democrats. They've had how many years to fix this issue? And they won't do it. Like you said, they tie it to things, to other issues and load everything into a 100-page bill. And it's not helping anything. Run single issue bills. Fix the problems a step at a time. Do your job.
It's amazing how young folks always come to agreement eventually. I'm just saying. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, we're going to move on. We're going to talk about some stuff close to home. Primary elections just happened. In the U.S. Senate, Mitt Romney beats Mike Kennedy with 73% of the vote.
And he's shocking.
Yeah, who saw that coming? And then he's going to face Jenny Wilson in November. In Congressional District 3, John Curtis beat Chris Harrod 75-25 and will face Democrat James Singer, as well as the United Utah Party's Melanie McCord and independent Gregory Dwerden. And in Senate District 2 here in Salt Lake City, Derek Kitchen leads Dr. Jen Plum 53-47 for the seat vacated by Senator Jim DeBacchus, a regular on this show. Are there any surprises from this year's primary election? Are there any surprises that we saw? Let's start on the left.
You know, I don't think it was surprising at all. The outcome was what I expected. And I, you know, I'm working with a lot of the candidates that had primaries, so I think the outcome was pretty expected for me.
Okay, Eric.
Yeah, I'm not seeing any big surprises either, and I don't think Romney nor Curtis are going to lose any sleep against their now Democrat opponents.
Yeah, what do we feel about that? This is a midterm for an unpopular Republican president. Are we going to see movement here on the left in Utah? Are we going to see some seats get taken? What are the predictions for the future?
I don't think Romney's going to lose, and I don't think Curtis is going to lose.
Okay, you know? what about Mia Love and Ben McAdams?
Ooh, that's a tough race.
You know, it is a tough race. You're right. They're both phenomenal candidates. They're both strong candidates, as I should say. But of course, the left, you know, we've expressed our dissent against Congresswoman Mia Love, and we're going to continuously express that dissent. So hopefully, Mayor Ben McAdams takes her seat this upcoming fall.
You know, and I will say Ben is a phenomenal campaigner. He knows how to run a campaign, and he's really likable. And Mia, you know, Mia has such a gift. You know, she's in a really prime position to affect some real change, and I want to see her accomplish that. It's a fun race to watch. I'm not sure what's going to happen.
It's going to be interesting, school bus and all. So I want to move on really quickly because Ermia has been involved with some really interesting events happening here with March for Our Lives, and so I want to talk about. I want to talk about guns, schools, and safety. So we're going to start off by saying the Utah School Safety Commission, established after the February shooting in Parkland, Florida, released its recommendation for gun violence prevention in schools, including red flag legislation, allowing weapons to be seized through court order, the creation of a school threat assessment team, improving mental health reporting for federal background check databases. Ermia, you've got some expertise on this issue. Why don't you walk us through some of those really quickly, and then we can have a discussion.
Right. So when we look at the red flag legislation, that is talking about the extreme risk protections. Currently, the law states that there can be firearm confiscation. They can take away a firearm from an individual if there has been certain specific threats against specific individuals. However, with these new red flag laws, they are now able to take away that firearm if that individual is a threat to the general public. And now a couple of my colleagues are actually sitting on this commission, a couple of my colleagues from March for Our Lives, Salt Lake City. And one of the things that me and my organization have focused on the most is background checks, as well as implementing waiting periods within our state between ordering a firearm and picking up a firearm. And these are recommendations that were lower tier recommendations within the commission, but I'm hoping that they actually get implemented into law the same way the red flag laws are being proposed.
So we talked a little bit about common sense laws, single issue bills, stuff like that. Eric, are you seeing anything in here that is something like that, that we can all agree on, that we can move forward on? Or are you seeing just going to be a lot of flags raised, red flag, haha, pun intended, with the red flag legislation? But are you seeing flags raised on the right with this with the recommendations here?
It's an interesting question, and I want to start off by saying, you know, traditionally, well, maybe not traditionally, but normally commissions are looked at as kind of a way to just push off the issue. We don't really ever expect them to really come up with anything useful. I was really surprised with the recommendations they gave on how kind of astute and useful they probably will be. Now, that's a different conversation than whether they're actually going to be implemented in the session. You know, this is the easiest part, is coming up with the ideas. The hard part is getting it through our legislature. They're going to need to be able to count to 38, 15, and 1 to get this through. I was actually pretty pleased with the recommendations they made. I mean, I think we'll have some pushback on the right with seizing weapons. But I don't think a rational person would really argue that much that taking away a weapon from a potentially harmful person is a bad idea. The better recommendation that they made, I thought, was dealing with the mental health issues. That's something I've been calling for a long time. You can implement locked doors. You can implement, you know, seizing weapons and these things that treat the symptoms of the issue. But are we treating the disease? Are we looking at the mental health issues that our kids are having, and are we helping them?
That's, you know, a good thought. Yeah, Ermia, go ahead.
It's one thing that I want to say is, with these recommendations, focusing on mental health is probably one thing that did not excite me the most when I saw these recommendations. Because, you know, we can blame it on the mental health all we want, but what me and my organization have really been focused on is how we can implement safe gun, in a common sense, gun laws, right? Because as is shown historically, a lot of these mass shooters, and a majority of them actually, did not have any mental health issues to begin with. So is this really a problem? Is mental health really the issue that we need to be focusing on?
If you participate in a mass shooting, you have a mental health issue, period.
But
you're
is that
crazy.
The only cause, right?
No, right, right.
Right.
There are other causes.
And if this person was truly mentally ill, which, you know, it has shown that a majority of them weren't, or any mental illnesses to be found, then should they have access to those firearms?
This is going to be a really interesting topic to look at. And, you know, in our a piece of legislation similar to the red flag legislation was brought up during the last session, and it didn't make it out of committee. So I'll be interested to see what they're able to pull off this time.
Well, we appreciate both of your thoughts. We're going to have to leave it at that. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. We want to thank Ermia Fernion for coming on for her thoughts representing the left. And we want to thank Eric Rowan, who has represented the right. I'm Matt Lustig in the political middle. Our program was produced by the talented, wonderful Emily Means. Thank you for listening. Until next time.